Reality TV has a corollary in reality-based fake TV news. If you've ever seen The Daily Show on Comedy Central or The Ali G Show on HBO, you're familiar with the conceit of the pretend journalist asking inane questions of real, if unwitting, public figures. It works, often to hilarious effect, only so long as the interviewee is, to some degree, unwitting. As in this interview, between mock hip-hop youth reporter Ali G and former national security advisor Brent Scowcroft.
Did they ever catch the people that sent Tampax through the post?
No, they did not. It wasn't Tampax, it was anthrax.
All right, I think there's different brand names. Like we say pavement, you say sidewalk, whatever.
Actually, Ali G's time in America may be over. His would-be victims know him now. In fact, recently one Republican Capitol Hill press secretary sent an email to all his GOP counterparts warning of Ali G. But what of The Daily Show? You'd think that with multiple Emmy and Peabody Awards and more exposure than at least one Hilton sister, producers would have run out of unsuspecting guests for its famous field reports. But they haven't. Stuart Bailey is co-executive producer of The Daily Show and has been with the program since its creation in 1996. Stuart, welcome to OTM.
Thank you very much. And by the way, we would be thrilled if we ever achieved the notoriety of at least one Hilton sister. That's still a goal for us.
Well, from your lips to God's ears. Stuart, give me a sense first of how these field reports come about. I mean, you have four or five faux correspondents. You find some story. Then what happens?
We actually sort of operate in a strange way, like an actual newsroom. We have researchers and associate producers and field producers who all gather information, pre-interview people, and we are sort of documenting a real story to some very thin extent. If it were a pure sketch, it doesn't work as well. And our audience, they have a very big fake meter, and if they don't sense that this is actually something in somebody's life or that it means something to somebody, then they lose interest very quickly.
When your field producers fan out to book these interviews, what exactly did they say to the prospective interviewees? I mean, you must employ some sort of bait-and-switch kind of ruse with prospective guests.
Not really. I mean, you would think so, but they kind of want to participate in this alternative reality, you know. And when you ask somebody a very silly question with a completely straight face, you will, by and large, get a straight answer, which is what we want. What we're really getting at is the journalist in a story who is so cocky, is so suave, is so smooth. No one's really like that. And so what if you got somebody that was really not very capable at all of even understanding a basic story, but yet sent them out to report on something? What would happen? And that's a lot of times the game that we're playing in an interview.
Okay, here's an example of that. This is Stephen Colbert interviewing Lonnie Randolph, president of the South Carolina NAACP, about its boycott of the Dukes of Hazzard movie because of the Confederate flag painted on the roof of the good old boys' 1969 Dodge Charger.
That flag is the universal symbol of bigotry, racism, and white supremacy.
Are you sure about that?
I am absolutely sure about that.
Even on a kick-ass car? Which is fun. It's on top of a car.
It was also fun to lynch black people at one time in this country. A lot of fun.
See, that's where you and I differ.
Now, I was going to ask you if interviews sometimes fall apart because folks are onto you and refuse to play along, but I'll bet it's much worse when they are onto you and they do try to play along.
Well, you wouldn't know it because we'll never use that. If somebody is trying to crack jokes, then that's the first thing that's on the edit room floor. So that's an easy problem for us to solve. The thing that we don't do is let people know exactly what our ultimate point of view is. I mean, we did a piece on election night that was our exit polling piece, and we felt that exit polls were not only sort of meaningless, but also invasive. So to get at that point, we decided to poll people as they were exiting anything. We found a guy that was coming out of a porn shop, and Samantha Bee walked up to him and said, "Excuse me, sir, can I have your full name and exactly what did you purchase in there?" And we had to put a bar over his eyes, but his eyes almost popped out. We want there to be as many natural moments as possible.
HBO has said there are no plans to bring back the Ali G show, partly because the joke has worn too thin and that too many people recognize them now. Do you think The Daily Show has to worry that at some point its profile will be so high that it really can't find any more stooges?
Stooges is an ugly word, Bob.
You're right. I apologize for that. Let's just say dupes.
If we really thought of it like that, we probably would worry. But almost always, the people that are involved in our reports are thrilled with them. They 99% of the time call us and say, that was wonderful. My kids think I'm the coolest dad in the world now. And so if it weren't for that, I think we would worry.
Stuart, thank you very much.
Pleasure, Bob.
Stuart Bailey is the co-executive producer of The Daily Show on Comedy Central.
A few months back, Daily Show reporter Samantha Bee decided to take on the controversy surrounding Clint Eastwood's movie Million Dollar Baby, which ends shockingly with a mercy killing. She called Newsday film critic Gene Seymour, who at first thought they were going to talk about euthanasia, then learned it was going to be how film critics are spoilers who ruin surprise endings, and finally realized it was about something else altogether.
I kind of knew what to expect and that I was probably being set up for something, but it was my inclination to kind of play along.
Right.
Because, you know, I know how comedy works, and I knew that whatever they did, the important thing was for me to be as deadpan about it as possible.
What about better enforcement of spoiler alerts? Should we adapt a color coding system similar to Homeland Security?
Yes. I think using colors to denote the level of shock, the impact.
Don't look at my boobs.
I'm sorry. As you say, it's certainly worked well in Homeland Security. It could also work well in defending people.
Don't look at them.
Your eyes are very nice.
Thank you. How are my boobs? See? You looked at them again.
So, your 15-year-old watches the show all the time. Is any of this going through your mind?
Yeah. And I guess part of what was going through my mind was that, well, because he is a 15-year-old son of mine, my embarrassment is by no means something that is necessarily undesirable to him, because we as parents embarrass him all the time. So this to him is kind of give back. Also, I know that at the moment, anyway, The Daily Show kind of rules the world in terms of TV comedy right now. And I just wanted to see just what it was like to be in that world, even if it is as kind of a comic stumble bum foil. Only one person seemed to be grieving for my self-esteem. My God, didn't you know they were ridiculing you? Didn't you know they were setting you up? And I said, well, you're the only one who thinks that.
Was that your wife?
No. No, my wife, she found it bewildering, but she knew more than anyone else that I was not looking at her boobs.
But at some point there, and it seemed to me this was an efforted comedy at your part, you seemed to be making strives to definitely not look at her chest.
Yes, I did try to consciously shift my eyes. You did notice that then,
mm-hmm.
right? I did. I was sort of thinking, okay, this is improvisational theater, and therefore one needs to kind of live in the moment. Professional funny people don't like it when amateurs are trying to out-funny them.
Right.
I knew that going in. And so I decided to be whatever it is they wanted me to be.
Film critic Gene Seymour writes for Newsday.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Megan Ryan, Tony Field, Jamie York, and Mike Volo, and edited by Brooke. Dylan Keefe is our technical director, and Jennifer Munson, our engineer. We had engineering help from Rob Christensen and other help from Sarah Dalsimer and Josh Nathan Kazis. Our webmaster is Amy Pearl.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer and John Keefe our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. You can listen to the program and find free transcripts, MP3 downloads, and our podcast at onthemedia.org and email us at onthemedia@wnyc.org. This is On the Media from WNYC. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Are you looking at my boobs?
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org, the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the Foundation of Entrepreneurship, on the web at kauffman.org, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Support for On the Media comes from the Lincoln Center, presenting the Mostly Mozart Festival, and the Bidell Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.